Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
It's the Fan War Room. Training Camp 2019. Road to Redemption Preview. Presented by Brothers Barbecue. Here's your host, Zach By.
Yes, and we are live. Our Fan War Room Training Camp 2019 Road to Redemption. It is finally here, guys. And I said this a couple days ago, and I'll just start here. I said to Stokely, my everyday partner, I said, I'm as excited, and Stink, we'll start with you. And let me just introduce our panel quickly before we get underway. Mark Schlereth here, one half of Schlereth and Evans. Of course, my everyday co-host, one half of Stokely and Zach, Brandon Stokely, Nick Ferguson of the Safety Blitz, and James Marilat from 1043thefan.com. Tremendous cast of characters here, guys. Thanks for being here. I know we all have our own duties, so this is extra. But Stink, we'll start with you and move our way down the end of the table. I said a couple days ago that, yes, I'm as excited to start training camp 2019, but I'm almost equally as excited to put 2017 and 18 behind us. Back-to-back losing seasons, first time since Richard Nixon was the president in the early 70s. It has just been so bad. It's had such a negative tone around here. So just as excited to turn the page here.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, the excitement to turn the page, but I look at, there's so many questions that I feel like are going to get answered. You know, there's so many people that look at this thing like, well, it's you know, like I have looked at it, like the talent level isn't what it has needed to be, and the depth isn't what it needed to be, and I still think we lack some depth, but there's that side of the kind of coin that people look at and say, well, it's all talent and it's all this, and then it was, well, Vance Joseph is in over his head and Vance Joseph and his staff aren't good enough. And I think a lot of the questions that we've had about this roster and about this football team as an organization are going to be answered. And I'm excited because I just believe what they have done the last couple of years to bolster their roster. And like I said, I still believe that their roster lacks depth. But I think there's more talent at the top end of their roster than there has been in a couple of years. But to have a NFL coach that's got some gravitas about him, that's done it for a very long time, that I think will bring some discipline and some execution game day to this organization, I think that's a great thing. And in a day and age where everybody's going young and we're getting the next young coach and college coaches that have never done it before and guys that have never been head coaches, I know that Vic Fangio hasn't been a head coach, but he brings a certain credibility to the Broncos organization, which I think they have lacked. When we talk about developing and building a culture, I think that's something that they have lacked the last couple of years, and I think that part of the equation is solved with Vic Fangio.
Yeah, so, I mean, you look at the last 2 years, the Vance Joseph era, right? Now we get to kind of turn the page on that, and now it's the Vic Fangio era. How will that look? And like Mark said, he's never been a head coach, but he's a veteran defensive coordinator, so he's run sides of the football. He's been in charge of the defensive side of the football. And with Vance Joseph, he was that for 1 year in Miami, and it wasn't even that good in Miami. So we have more of a proven coach. Now we'll see how it handles being a head coach, but I like the direction that this organization is heading, and I don't think they're going to take a huge step this year, but I like the direction. I think they are starting to move in the right direction, and like Mark said, this training camp is going to answer a lot of questions and going to show us a lot about who the Broncos will be in 2019.
Nick, why are you excited for training camp?
Well, for me, the reason that I'm excited about this year's training camp is because of Vic Fangio and Mike Munchak. And I know there's a lot of individuals who are down on the Broncos. They're not giving them a lot of credit. Mark talked about a lot of question marks and not having an adequate depth at certain key positions. But, you know, I like that. I like the underdog approach. I mean, Chris Harris Jr., he was viewed as being an underdog. Joe Flacco was an underdog. Garrett Bowles, who everyone seems to be piling on, a lot. Now, he is an underdog, and the way that I break this team down, I say, well, yeah, there's not a lot of head coaching experience. I mean, looking at Scangarello being the first-time play caller, Fangio being at 60, getting his first opportunity to be a head coach, but essentially you have a head coach on the defensive side of the ball and you have a head coach on the offensive side of the ball, because Mike Munchak, he used to be a head coach in the NFL. So if Rick Scangarello started to have issues calling plays, building that chemistry, now you have a guy who's been there, who's a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, who can help you out. So that's why I don't look at the season as being as dreadful as most people, you know, do when they give their prediction. Now, I'm the person on the station that said 12-4, while everyone else is thinking 9-7 and 8-8. But I played here when it was at a certain standard. So I'm trying to get things back to that standard, but that's just my level of excitement and belief in this organization and the coaches they put together.
And we will get back later in today's War Room to our forecast of the 2019 season. But before we do that, James Merrillat from 104.3thefan.com, react to anything that you just heard.
Well, I'm just tired of watching a baseball team that loses 19-2. So we get to watch football now, talk football. That's the reason to be excited about it. But no, in all seriousness, to me, the two most important things of any organization, it's the head coach and it's the quarterback. And in both those areas, this team is so vastly improved over what we've seen the last couple of years that, you know, I think there's reason to be optimistic, maybe cautiously optimistic. But Joe Flacco, say what you will about him, he's light years better than what we saw with Trevor Siemian and Case Keenum. And the Vance Joseph era was a disaster. And Vic Fangio, it's a little bit like when they went from McDaniels to John Fox. Okay, now all of a sudden a grown-up is in the room again. I think that's what we're going to see from a head coaching standpoint. So from a football side of things, head coach, quarterback, big improvement, reason to be optimistic heading into camp.
Zach, I it's interesting. As I travel around and call games for Fox, like, everybody has this, can we just get the ode of McVay on us, right? Like, oh, McVay. And everybody looks at it like a young guy. And you sit down and talk with Sean McVay, and it's like I left the meeting with him going, like, I haven't accomplished anything in my entire life. Like, I felt like, wow, blown away by him. Or Matt Nagy, the same thing. You feel blown away by maturity beyond their years, energy. Like, they walk in the room, and it's energized. Like, I always say there's two types of people. People who walk in the room and energize it, people who walk out of the room and energize it, right? And these are guys that are so unique. And to sit here as an organization and just think it's a young guy. Like, I'm talking to Vance Joseph, and I'm not bashing on Vance Joseph, but I said, how much, you know, as we're preparing to do the call the Rams game, I go, how much interaction do you have with Wade Phillips, who is a former defense coordinator here? He's 76, 77 years old. And he goes, oh, I talk to Wade, you know, a couple times a week. He goes, you know, he sends me all these emojis and all these, and I've got to ask people what it means. I'm like, so here you hire a young coach in Vance Joseph, and you think he's going to connect with the players because you think he's young and maybe he knows. Like, there's nobody that connected any better with the players than Wade Phillips did.
Right.
And so age has nothing to do with your ability to connect and your ability to communicate. And so that's one of the reasons that I'm excited. I think a lot of teams went young simply because they saw the success that McVay had and thought it had something to do with young. No, it has something to do with communication and getting his guys to play for him. And I'm telling you, it's just a different cat. So I'm really excited about the Broncos kind of bucking that trend and going with a guy that has instant, like, it has had a ton of success and has kind of instant credibility when he walks in the building.
And I have to share this line with you from Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated. He said the Broncos bucked the trend of chasing the Sean McVay brat pack.
Right.
And I thought that was like the perfect way to say it. Stoke, do you believe the Broncos have their guy? Vic Fangio is going to be the coach in 2022, 2023.
I do. You know, everything that we've seen so far, to me, checks the boxes for Vic Fangio. So I believe that they have the right guy. I like the hire. The guy's been in the NFL for a long time, been very successful. He hadn't had an opportunity to be a head coach. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be a head coach. I actually like the experience that he has and, you know, kind of piggybacking off of, you know, the trend and going against the trend. Just because everybody else is doing it doesn't mean these young guys are going to be successful. I like John realizing the mistake that he made with Vance Joseph and doing it different this year, and not just going with the trend of getting one of these young guys and just saying, I'm going to do what everybody else is doing. Found a guy that's a perfect fit, I think, for him and I think for this organization. Now, we will see. You know, who actually knows what Vic Fangio is going to look like on Sundays, how he's going to operate? Nobody does. So we'll see when the lights come on how he'll perform, but I think he's going to be fine. I think it was a really good hire. Nick?
I really believe in Coach Vangio. I think they have found the right guy. When you look at what Mark was talking about, following the trend, Sean McVay, there's a lot of coaches in the league that come from that Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan tree. Zach Taylor is now the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, and Matt LaFleur is now in Green Bay. What coach and with what team actually stopped the Rams before the Pats played them? It was the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. When I talked to Coach Vangio about it, and he said basically what the Patriots did is follow his blueprint. So when you're going to look for a head coach, and I know everyone's enamored with, you know, putting points up on the board, but it's never going to change. Football is about throwing the ball, tackling, and running, right? And you have to be able to slow down some of these so-called high-power quarterbacks and offenses. So you go out and you get your defensive guy. I mean, a lot of people are not putting a lot of merit into what Coach Vangio brings because he's a 60-year-old head coach and with no head coaching experience. For me, that's what I want. I mean, today there was a list printed out as far as the ranking of coaches, right? Vangio was 27. Of the top coaches, all of those coaches are 60 and above. That's a lot of football knowledge. And we saw when the Patriots played the Sean McVay and the Rams, and I go back to this look that Sean McVay had on his face. He looked puzzled. He looked stumped because guess what? He couldn't match wits with Bill Belichick at that time. So to me, defense still wins championship, as cliche as that is, but that's another level of optimism that I have, and I had the distinct pleasure of telling Coach Vangio my whole idea of 12-4. And he ran away from me, but I made sure I followed him because I wanted him to burn that 12-4 image into his mind. So when he goes to training camp tomorrow and start talking to players, he thinks about that. And he's thinking about me, Nick Ferguson, that I said that because I'm putting a lot of pressure on him and his defense to be great because I know they can.
We're going to get back to your 12-4.
Yeah, you're
don't
really
you
earning that 12-4, man.
Hey,
it's mine.
I like it. Hey, have a take.
Stop
I like it.
Doubling down on that, buddy. Just stop it.
James Marilab, 104.3thefan.com. The Broncos have had as much change at the coaching position as any team in the sport. Do they finally have their guy?
I think so, and I like the idea of zigging when everybody else is zagging. I think what the guys have mentioned here makes a lot of sense. Don't just follow the trend to follow the trend. I will say, though, I'm not worried about his age. I couldn't care less that he's 60. I'm with you in terms of Wade Phillips and his ability to relate to younger players. That's not an age thing. The only thing that worries me about it is the fact that it took this long to get that opportunity and to become a head coach. That's a little bit of a red flag to me. Like, why? Why was he passed by that many times? Why was he not in that position? There has to be some explanation for it. Sometimes you just get overlooked, and you have the ability, you have the talent, and I don't know, maybe you just didn't look the part,
well,
right?
He said at his introductory press conference, he said, I've never fit the profile of being a head coach. He's kind of surly. He's sort of prickly. He doesn't light up the room when he walks in like Sean McVay. He's not that guy. He's just more like football acumen.
And I think that if that's the reason, then we have nothing to worry about. We also heard the same thing, though, about the Ryan brothers, right? They don't look like a CEO. They don't look like a head coach. And that's why they got passed over. And then when they got in those positions, they weren't able to act like a CEO, which is a lot of what a head coach has to do. That's the only reason I have a little bit of caution with Vic Fangio. But everything we've heard from him, everything we've seen, I like.
Yeah, one of the interesting things is when Gary Kubiak was the offensive coordinator here, back in my days and right after I retired, when the Houston Texans first came onto the scene, they wanted to hire Charlie Casserly was the GM. He was a GM in Washington when I played in Washington. So Charlie Casserly calls me and says, hey, you know, we're going to interview Gary Kubiak. You know, this is kind of what we're looking for. Can you call Kubes and kind of, you know, give him the rundown? So I call Kubes and we talk about it. So Kubes goes there and he gets bypassed by Dom Capers. Is who they hire the first time. And Charlie really wanted to hire Gary Kubiak. But Gary Kubiak, in his interview process, wasn't demonstrative enough, wasn't, you know, rah-rah enough, wasn't what he was, you know, Gary's who he is. And, you know, and so, bottom line, when they ended up firing Dom Capers, Casserly called me again and said, hey, listen, this is the guy I want to hire. Can you make sure, you know, when he walks in here, can you talk to him about just kind of selling himself a little bit more than he did before? Whether he did that or not doesn't matter. The point being is sometimes you get passed by, not because you don't have football knowledge, because the owners have been duped into believing that Sean McVay, if you don't get the Sean McVay guy, like that's the guy that's going to change your franchise. And that's just not, it's just not factual. It's guys that, that have command of a football team, guys that instantly have respect, guys that, that, like, none of us care about getting chewed out or yelled at or screamed at or told we're terrible. As long as I know that you're coaching me and trying to make me the best player I can be, you can say anything you want about me. And so there's a certain, there's just, sometimes the owners are just looking for that guy to walk through and really sell himself. And sometimes that guy, you know, oftentimes that guy's not the right guy.
Well, and I look at it like also, I why did it take Vic Fangio to so long to get a head coach job? We'll see. We'll see how he does. But I think John needs a guy like Vic. He needs that type of coach, not a guy that he feels like he can just kind of walk all over, a guy that's going to give him some pushback. I think that's why him and Gary Kubiak work so well together. Obviously, they're good buddies, but Gary can look at him and say, John, you're crazy. No. No, where most coaches would be like, okay, John, what do you want me to do? That's fine. Whatever you want to do, I just like to be the head coach. He needs somebody to give him a little pushback when he's, you know, doing something that he shouldn't be doing or going down a road that he shouldn't be going down and to kind of put him in check. And that's hard for a lot of people to do. I mean, that's John Elway. But obviously, Gary Kubiak could do that. And I think Vic Fangio could do that also. And we're getting a RamosLaw.com text here. Took years for Bruce Arians to get a job. Same type of thing. He didn't look the part. You know, he was in Pittsburgh forever, then went to Indy and got the interim role there when Chuck Pagano had the cancer.
Right.
And he did a great job, right. And that's the only reason he got the job. And he obviously did really well in Arizona, now in Tampa Bay. So, but I think it's a good fit for John Elway, and John needs a guy like Vic Fangio.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because we never sensed that dynamic with Vance. And not that it was, you know, all on Vance. It's just the dynamic at play. You have this young coach who was a young-time DC, understands that this is John's baby. And I agree with you. It's almost like you want your wife to challenge you. Like you don't want to have to walk. You don't walk over your wife. You want that equal. And I know that's not the same parallel here. But Vic Fangio.
Not touching that one.
It almost seems like when he was there on the stage with John, they're looking at each other as equals. If not, almost John having almost a bit of reverence.
John needs, and John knows he needs him. Right, John needs a head coach to be successful, and so I think the process that he's been through, he realizes that he needs a guy that he can work well with.
Well, and we saw that already, right? When they were trying to figure out who's going to be the offensive coordinator and put together that staff.
Good call.
We all thought it was going to be Gary Kubiak, and then it was, well, we're going to bring back Rick Dennison. And at some point, Vic Fangio said, no, I've waited a long time for this job. That's not the crew I'm going to go to battle with, and he was willing to draw a line in the sand. I thought that was a very positive sign that he would say, nope, that's not how we're going to do things around here. That was what we never saw with VJ.
It's a great call, and if you remember Vance's staff, half of his staff were holdovers. I mean, they were from the previous regime, like literally half of it. So we all kind of agree that the Broncos are heading in the right direction with their coach. Are they heading in the right direction organizationally?
It is what I want to say. I'm going to go back, and then I'll touch on that. When you hire a guy like Fangio, it's not just the fact of John wanting someone to push back against him. He wanted someone, day one, who can walk into that room, and all those guys can actually respect it. I mean, Coach Fangio said earlier that Vaughn is going to be doing some things this season that he's never done before, which bothers a lot of people when you're talking about taking an elite pass rusher and dropping him back in coverage. And he also said that Vaughn has a lot to learn. And you're thinking at this point, this stage in Vaughn's career, what more does he have to learn? But that is coming from a guy who has years of experience as a defensive coordinator, breaking down film, breaking down players, knowing how to put players in the right position to succeed. And that's what, you know, this organization didn't have these past two seasons. I mean, it got to a point, and I don't want to, you know, call people out, but it got to a point where some of the players, you know, didn't really respect Vance. They really, really didn't. And I can tell you as a former player, if I don't respect the scheme, I'm not buying into it. And most coaches always talk about the culture and buying into that culture. If I don't respect you as a head coach, I'm not going to be willing to go out there and play injured and play hurt or even listen to you. So that is what Fangio brings in, just like a Joe Flacco, just like Peyton did when he was here and why he was tops on your list. When you have a guy like that walk in the building right away, instant credibility based on his resume, and that's why they're buying into it.
And I think a lot of this moving forward, to your point of challenging Vaughn, it's about the follow-through of actually doing it. Because lest we forget, one of the first things that Vance Joseph said when he showed up, you remember what he said? We need more from DT. We need 88 to be dominant at all times. And at the time, it was like, whoa, Vance came in here. He's challenging this all-pro receiver. But the actual practice and follow through of holding these guys accountable, and that word accountable probably was something that was seriously missing, judging by the context clues over the last couple of years.
There was no repercussions if Von Miller jumped offside for the fourth time in two games. It was just, there was no consequence to it, right? And you played, you know, with Shannon Sharp, and Mike Shanahan came in there and said, look, he's a great pass catcher, but if he doesn't block, he's not going to play. And he was willing to, you know, hold true to that threat.
And beyond that, he said if he didn't practice, which Shannon was
always had a nick.
Always had a nick, didn't practice. So if you don't practice, you don't get a play from me. You know, Vaughn, I mean, I sat down and met with Vaughn before I called the Rams game and asked him. I said, dude, you're driving me crazy. Like, Vaughn and I are tight. Like, and Vaughn's great because Vaughn will take it and Vaughn will absorb it and go, yeah, you're right. You know, I can be better at that. Like, you if you challenge Vaughn is very self-aware of where he's at. And I was like, you're jumping off sides. As a fan, it drives me crazy. Like, and he goes, hey, man, I'm coached better than that. They coach me. I'm coached better. But you still do it. You know what I mean? And you're like, well, Vaughn, and I think those are the things that will get cleaned up under a coach that you respect more.
We are live here, Training Camp 2019 Road to Redemption War Room. Big shout out to Brothers Barbecue, who always does a tremendous job with their spreads. Everyone's eating high off the hog here today because of those guys, locally owned and operated, do a terrific job. This is like the 10th time that they've done this. So huge shout out to Brothers Barbecue, doing a tremendous job of catering here today, and they can cater your next party, so give them a shout. We have not talked about what I believe may be the most important topic with the Denver Broncos in 2019. It's been an issue. Is it still an issue? We'll take a dive into it next. All right, we're live here, Training Camp 2019 Road to Redemption War Room, presented by Brothers Barbecue. Appreciate those guys. As we are heading to break, and again, to my right, Mark Schlereth, Brandon Stokely, to my left, Nick Ferguson, and James Marilap. Before we went to break, I said the topic that we're going to broach here is, in my mind, maybe right at the top of the list in terms of priorities and sense of urgency for the Denver Broncos, and that is getting this offense out of the mud. It has been years here where the Broncos, in terms of points per game, four consecutive years, in fact, that the Broncos have been bottom third in the NFL. Just hasn't been good. And we were just talking about the coaches that, James, you said the Broncos zigged when everyone else zagged. Where they did not do that, and they did hire the guy who had the scent of a guy that they can't hire, is Rich Scangarello. You talk about a guy who is unproven. His Wikipedia page is two sentences long. 3 years ago, he was coaching in the Northeast Conference for Wagner. You know, you're trying to slow down Duquesne, okay?
It's a powerhouse. This is easy on Wagner.
This is a lot different than that. This is a lot different than that. He was quality control coach, and he has this meteoric rise, and now he's the offensive coordinator for a team that needs to figure it out. James, we'll start with you at that end of the table this time. Your thoughts about Rich Scangarello having the burden of this laid at his feet?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that's worrisome. I think they're kind of hoping a little bit of Kyle Shanahan has rubbed off on him, and there's some osmosis there, kind of like the McVay thing, right, where anybody who's had coffee with Sean McVay, they want to interview and they want to hire him. Same kind of thing happening here with Kyle Shanahan. I do think that they're also putting a lot of faith in Mike Munchak. Like, he's sort of the experienced guy on that side of the ball. I know he'll bring that to the table, but he's not going to be the miracle worker that everybody thinks he's going to be, right? Like, you can be the greatest coach in the world if you don't have talent to work with, and that offensive line is full of question marks. It's going to be an uphill battle. So, yeah, you're right. That's a meteoric rise. That's a guy who's, you know, we were all worried about Vance Joseph had only done it for 1 year as a DC in Miami. This is a guy with probably even less experience. So, that's going to be a big leap. and they don't really have anybody else other than Munchak to fall back on, right? The head coach is a defensive-minded guy. There's not someone else on that staff. You think, well, if it's not working out early, he can lean in this direction. I don't know where they go if Scangarello is grasping at straws early. That's going to be interesting to watch.
Nick Ferguson from the Safety Blitz. You have a little bit of experience with Rich Scangarello, do you not?
Yeah, I do. We were on the same coaching staff last year, and I know that's a big question mark. You know, first-time play caller. Very difficult to do. I've watched several coaches struggle with that, and that was kind of a chore even for, you know, a seasoned guy like Kyle. Because, you know, situations change. You face different opponents week in and week out. So that's kind of a huge question mark. But looking at the way that the Broncos team has been put together, it's sort of similar to what we faced in San Francisco last year. I mean, George Kittle, I mean, he ripped the defense apart, right? And Kyle pulled back. He didn't continue to, you know, utilize, you know, George Kittle in the passing game. So when you look at where we were at that time when the Broncos played us and where the team is right days before the start of training camp, it is heavy tight end dominated, right? We have a young wide receiver core here in Denver, and we have one of the top receivers on the team coming off an Achilles injury. And you're now, you know, putting all your hopes on Courtland Sutton that he can be either the number one guy if needed to be, or he can be the complement to Emmanuel Sanders. So it's kind of the same situation we were in then, but I do have a lot of confidence in Scangarello because there are some ties to Mike Shanahan. And Kyle proved last year that, you know, he's a smart coach. We didn't have all the weapons, and I was telling James right before we started, is, you know, we didn't have a lot of weapons in San Francisco. I mean, Scangarello has a lot to play with. I mean, you have three options at the running back position. All offseason, we've been talking about, you know, Philip Lindsay. Is he going to come back from that wrist injury, and how was he going to do it? You draft Noah Fant. You have Jake Butt. You have Jeff Hyman. A lot of those guys don't have a lot of experience, but seeing as though the tight end position has been elevated to a whole different level. They're called tight ends, but let's call them what they really are, wide receivers. So you have multiple personnel groupers, and I've heard Mark talk about it all the time. They're going to run the same play out of the same, you know, personnel grouping, right, all the time to see how disciplined you are from a defensive perspective. So this could be an offense that looks entirely different from what we saw last year. It's going to look really different from what we saw last year with the San Francisco 49ers, but there are more weapons that Scangarello can actually utilize.
Stoke, Rich Scangarello.
I'm so much more concerned with him than Vic Fangio. I look at Vic and I feel comfortable. He hasn't been a head coach, but I feel comfortable with him. Rich Scangarello, who knows? I mean, this guy, you know, he's leading that group offensively. We know the struggles that we've had offensively. Now, he's got players, more players than the past couple years, more weapons to use. But the newness of him and the responsibility that he has and what we need for him to do to get this thing back heading in the right direction, I have a lot more concern with him than I do with Vic Fangio. So, for me, if you're lining up the storylines, I mean, Rich Scangarello is at the top of the list. How is he going to perform? What is this offense going to look like? And like James said, I mean, who does he have to lean on? You know, sometimes with a young guy, you want that veteran coach to lean on the offensive side of the football. You have Mike Munchak, but we don't think of Mike Munchak as an offensive play caller. I don't know if he's ever called offensive plays or not, but that's not what we think of Mike Munchak. So if he would have had somebody like that on the staff to be able to lean on with experience, that I think that would have helped. But for me, yeah, it's a big concern, Rich Scangarello and his inexperience.
I'm with you. I mean, it is a concern. Like, one thing in this offense, they will personnel group you to death. And most teams now are in sub-package 65-70% of the time. When you call a game or when you're watching football, they're in three rides, one tight, one back. They'll spread. They'll do all those things out of that. You're going to see two tights, two backs, two, you know, one tight, two backs, one back, two tights. You're going to see a bunch of different personnel groupings. They're going to come in and out. They're going to make you as a defense declare what you're going to be in. That's this offense. My concern is this. It's stacking plays, stacking concepts, setting plays up.
like creating plays in the first quarter that you know you're going to expose a defense, watching what a defense and how they play you. How are we going to set up the play action off of this? The other thing that concerns me is when you watch Kyle Shanahan or you meet with Kyle Shanahan, Kyle wants to get the play in and get running the play at about 20, 22 seconds. Why does he want to do that? Because they have a can it principle. So what that means is everything they run is based off of two plays called in the huddle. So they'll have a play called, and then they'll have a can it principle with that play, meaning if we get the look that we want, we run the play that's called. If we don't, we can it, and we get to the secondary play that we want to run. I played in Washington with a first-time offensive coordinator named Rod Dahauer. And I can't tell you how many times we got the play in with 4 seconds left because he couldn't make a decision on what he wanted to play. It's impossible to play offense like that. Like, you can't. You're rushing up the line of scrimmage. You can't get your keys. You can't look at safety rotation. You can't look at linebackers that are in bad positions. You can't get yourself ready. And all of a sudden, you got to snap the ball right now. Makes it very difficult. Like, we like to get up to the line of scrimmage, and you want to see leverage, you know, what kind of corner leverage you got, what kind of safety leverage. Like, if I see linebackers that have shifted one side or another, if a guy's out of position as an offensive lineman, I'm like, I see this middle linebacker that's bossed over strong, then I know, hey, man, they're going to have weak safety rotation. I mean, it's just almost 100%, right? And so if I'm in my stance, I can look at all that stuff and I go, okay, now I know, man, I'm going to get a pinch or I'm going to, you start to think that way as an offensive player. You get the ball with 4 seconds left and you snap it, like you can't absorb all the information that you want to absorb before you actually play the game. And so that's my concern of never calling plays before, stacking concepts, attacking people based upon what they've given you in the first couple of quarters, and then getting the plays in on time, understanding kind of where you're going. And like, that takes time.
Yeah, and it's like adjustments throughout the course of the game.
Right.
How is he going to do? Halftime adjustments are a big deal in the NFL. This is what they're going. This is what we're going to start going with. What will he look like, you know, at halftime, third quarter, fourth quarter?
Now, I love the fact that he wanted so much to be in Kyle Shanahan's system that he basically walked away from a good college job to sleep on a couch.
He did.
And not get paid.
I
love his story. Like, his story is incredible. But like Joe Woods was swimming last year at times as the first-time kind of play caller on the defensive side of the ball, to the point where Vance Joseph took over some of the play-calling duties on the defensive side. I'm not saying that that will happen. I'm just saying that there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve here when it comes to play-calling duties.
Shout-out to Brothers Barbecue. Local guys, founded and company-owned right here in Denver for the last 2 decades. They have 7 different Denver metro locations, from Castle Rock to Broomfield. Hit them up at Brothers Barbecue. /bbq.com. We have new information on a Bronco that may be the most important player to this offense. Details next. So we are live. Training camp 2019. Road to Redemption. Mark Schlereth, Brandon Stokely, Nick Ferguson, James Merrillat to the left and right of me. Guys, I want to pass some information along. It's about a question that we have asked throughout this offseason. Emmanuel Sanders, of course, tears the Achilles tendon, misses the last quarter of the 2018 season. This is on the heels of, I believe it was an ankle that he missed the last quarter of the 2017 season. It's a big year for Emmanuel. He's posted some videos. It's looked promising physically. He looks to be on point. But quotes from Nikki Jabala coming out within the last 45 minutes or so, she says, Emmanuel Sanders says he's, quote, definitely not going to be full go from the jump, end quote, in training camp, and isn't sure if he'll participate in the conditioning test tomorrow, Wednesday. Said they'll gradually work him back to full, quote, I want to be ready for week 1, end quote. Stoke, your reaction? Perfect. I'm great with that. No need to rush him back out there. Obviously a serious injury. He looked great in that little video that he posted, but he hadn't had pads on. He hadn't practiced football since that injury, and you don't just want to throw him back out there first day of training camp. So there needs to be a plan, a process with him, and get him back into football shape. He doesn't need to participate in the conditioning test. I saw him running around. He looks great. And so just continue to condition him, get him ready to go, and have a nice plan in place, and maybe he pops back in and plays, you know, in one preseason game, maybe two, and get him ready, like you said, get him ready for week one. That's when it matters the most. That's when we need him the most. You certainly don't want any kind of setback with Emmanuel Sanders. He's very, very valuable to this offense.
And speaking of that value, Stink, outside of the quarterback position, Joe Flacco, is Emmanuel Sanders the most important player for this offense?
It's a great question. He is... There are so many question marks on this offense, but he is one of the most dynamic guys, can run anything, plays tough, has separation type speed, bounces back when he gets hit. You know, he does all those things. So I think he's a huge piece to the puzzle. Also, to take pressure off the other side. I mean, and you think about it, if you don't have Emmanuel Sanders, the depth of this receiving core is not good. And now all of a sudden you take a young Cortland Sutton and say, hey, you got to be our number one. And you're going to draw either, you know, if you're – a lot of these teams will put the number one corner on, like the Rams will put your Aqib Talib on you. Or if it's the Patriots, they'll put their number two corner on you and roll a safety over the top if you're the number one, you know, depending on what they – how they deem your guys and how they want to game plan those things. But I think that's a lot of – there's a lot of pressure – on Emmanuel Sanders to be great. And I'm glad they're taking this approach because they need to take this approach. One of the things the players did in the last collective bargaining agreement was, you know, oftentimes we are, as players, our own worst enemies. They negotiated, you know, no practice, no hitting, no OTA physical contact out of the CBA. So we've got these $50 million facilities that you can't go use in the offseason. Like, that makes no sense to me, right? So now you go and you train like a track athlete for 3 months, and then all of a sudden you start practicing, and Stoke, you've been running routes on air, and you feel great, and you're running fast, and all of a sudden some DB jams you in the chest and starts leaning on you and pushing you down the field, and you haven't developed any kinesthetic awareness of
first time
people,
having full pads.
Right.
On also.
I mean, it's a difference. So we don't actually, in off-season, because of the collective bargaining agreement, train like football players. We train like track athletes. So taking a guy like Philip Lindsay or taking a guy like Emmanuel Sanders and easing them through this process to get them into quote-unquote football shape is the smartest thing you can do as an organization. But it's a real epidemic. It's a real issue. And I talk to teams, you know, I talk to teams all the time about that transition and how difficult it is right now to get guys ready to play simply because we can't do it in the off season anymore.
A quick sidebar. Among the Schlerathisms, kinesthetic awareness is right there in the
right.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I truly love it. James, at the other end of the table, Emmanuel Sanders. I'll ask you the same question I just asked Mark. Is Emmanuel Sanders, outside of the quarterback position, the most important member of this offense if this thing's going to get back on track?
Without a doubt. We saw it last year. When he went out, they were 6-6, had a chance to make the playoffs. They go 0-4 and averaged, I think it was 13 points a game in the last 4 weeks. Now, it's not all just because Emmanuel Sanders wasn't there, but that was the biggest missing piece. It was the biggest change. That offense wasn't good before that. It was dreadful once he was gone. And, you know, really, he's the only known commodity. I mean, we all like Cortland Sutton. We all like Philip Lindsay. We all like Noah Fant. We all think, hey, these guys could be, you know, good NFL players and can be dynamic. But we don't really know it. We probably know it more about Philip Lindsay than anybody else. And look at his production late in the year. He started to tail off when people kind of figured him out. And when it was, hey, he's their best offensive weapon. Yep. We need to take away Philip Lindsay. Wasn't very hard to take him away. So, Emmanuel Sanders has to be out there. He makes everybody else better. He's going to make Cortland Sutton better. He's going to make the running game better. If I'm Joe Flacco or I'm Rich Gangarello and I got to call plays for the first time and I'm looking out here and I don't have Emmanuel Sanders and I got all these unknown commodities to work with, That's a terrifying isn't the right word, but boy, that's an uphill battle.
Nick Ferguson, you got a big smile on your face. Tell me why.
Because I'm listening to you guys talk about Emmanuel Sanders being a key cog in the wheel for this team, and I feel entirely different because Mark, he knows this. The game is won and lost in the trenches. You just said outside of Joe Flacco, who's the most important player? How about the guy snapping him the ball and Connor McGovern? Because if you can't get the ball from the quarterback, from the center to the quarterback, we don't even have to worry about talking about Emmanuel Sanders getting the ball. And we're talking about Connor McGovern, who's a guard, who had to was forced to play center because due to injuries, Matt Paradis is no longer here. So you need someone to be the quarterback of your offense. That's your guy. I mean, he's the guy that relays the information to the guards who now give it to the tackles. So everyone's on the same page. There are five guys on the offensive line, but to me, they operate as one. You have to be on the same page. You just talk about the running game. The running game is the best friend of a quarterback, is it not? But if you can't snap the ball, you can't get these guys to block and pick up blitzes, what are we even talking about?
So are you just to be clear, are you telling me Connor McGovern is more important in this offense than Emmanuel Sanders?
Yes, exactly. Because
are you saying Connor McGovern, we got to worry about him snapping the ball? Like, if they're worried about that kind of nuts and bolts basics, we got all sorts of problems.
But listen, last year, McGovern had the problem, right? Most teams, when they faced him, they knew that he was a first-time guard. He was a guard playing center for the first time. So if we want to run double A-gap blitzes, guess where we're going with right over him. Because now he has to snap, he has to get his hands up, and now we're talking about the pre-snap communication. It wasn't there, but if you can't do that adequately, whether the guy's up, Flacco's on the center or he's in the shotgun, that's a problem because offense, Stoke, you know this, it's timing, it's rhythm, getting the ball out of your hand. And Joe Flacco is not a very mobile quarterback. So that timing, that rhythm, that's the first thing that you need to have, timing and rhythm with that quarterback and that center exchange.
Any reaction to what you just heard from Nick Ferguson?
I'm trying to wrap my head around it still, and that's not unusual. But
take your time.
I can't agree with him there. Obviously, if you have a Pro Bowl left tackle, okay, yeah, that guy's really important. A center position, I think, you know, if you put a guy like, you know, Mark Schlereth next to the center, he can cover up a lot of flaws from the center. I mean, getting the ball back to the quarterback, I mean, that's elementary. That goes without saying. If you're playing NFL and you're starting center, you got to be able to make the snap every single time without even thinking about it. And with McGovern last year, it was a little bit of an issue, like you said, because he hadn't played center. He's the guy this year, so he's getting those reps, and, you know, all through the offseason and in the training camp. So it should be a lot different. But I think if you say, who would I rather, you know, lose this year or not have this year, I mean, we can replace the center. We can't replace Emmanuel Sanders.
It just feels like Emmanuel is, and James referenced the stretch of time without Emmanuel. I don't want to even imagine what this looks like. Because Mark, you sort of hit on this. And I'll just say this. I'm a little bit higher than the depth of our receivers than you are. Mm-hmm. But I think we can agree when Emmanuel Sanders wasn't in the picture last year, the offense was a wet noodle.
Well, sure, because the thing you know about football is the complementary nature of football and how we all have to rely on one another. And, you know, that goes beyond offense to defense and special teams and how all that works in unison. And it goes beyond, you know, the complementary nature when you don't have a receiver that's busting one-on-one coverage on a consistent basis and you already have a weakness of your offensive line. And I'll take Nick's point even further. You know, Connor McGovern, I look at this whole offensive line, and there are question marks across the – can Garrett Bowles become a player? You know, Dalton Risner just signed his deal. He got a 4-year, $7 million deal to play left guard. Connor McGovern's a guy that, you know, is to me – He was a guy that last year, moving into whether it was guard or center, I thought he was just a guy. So he needs to improve as a football player. Ronald Leary had a back issue coming out of Dallas, had a knee issue for his first 2 years with the Broncos, then tore his Achilles, playing right guard for you. And Juwan James is a very talented athlete that comes from Miami that happens to have probably the worst culture in the NFL, and I can tell just watching film on him that he's smart. He understands angles. He understands where his help is. And the culture he came from is 1,001, 1,002, and I am done. And he gave up so many late hits and so many late pressures because he did not finish plays. Now, I think Mike Munchak can fix that. But you're talking about five different things that you have to, you know, think that you're going to create some unison up front, because as Nick said, he's 100% right. It's five that are one. Like, you've got to play that way to be good up front. So, I mean, I think that's a bigger issue in the overall scheme of things. But from a dynamic nature, I think Emmanuel is huge for this team.
This is an interesting conversation that we're about to peel back the onion here a little bit. And James, you sort of touched on it. When we talk about this offense, what do we actually know? What is the most known thing that you have confidence in on that entire side of the football? We'll get to that, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?